Yesterday, to explain some of the parameters of the concept of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Mechshol, a fascinating Isser in the Torah, which is interpreted a number of ways, and most of the attention in the Gemara, and Chazal, and the halachic literature afterwards, is about one specific application. The fact that if one enables an Avera, if somebody else needs you, so that they can sin, and you perform that role, the Gemara tells us in a number of places, most explicitly or most straightforwardly in Gemaras and Avodah Zarah and Emsachim and the like, but the Gemara makes reference to the idea all over Shas, especially many times in the Masechet Bava Metzia, that if you enable an Avera, you're in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Mechshol. And we talked a little bit about the parameters of that, about the fact that the Gemara tells us it has to be that you're crucial to the process, what's known as tre aver dinara, two banks of the river, because the person is on one side of the river and his avera tool is on the other side of the river, so he can't reach it without you. As opposed to chad aver dinara, they're all on one side of the river, so he could get it without you and you're not playing a crucial role. In that case, there's no prohibition in HaTorah, but as we mentioned, we've shown him in a number of places, some of which you may have seen, established that there is an Issur D'Rabbanan, in that case, called Misayeya Lidei Ovrei Avera. We spoke a little bit yesterday about what that Issur D'Rabbanan might relate to. But that's the basic requirement for there to be an Issur D'Raisa, that you're paying a crucial role in the performance of an Avera. And what we took note of yesterday, a very interesting question one could ask. We started to say that there are at least two major lumdisha questions that the Achronim talk about in this sugya. And we would like to put forward today that the two questions are absolutely linked to each other. They are interdependent. And that both questions start with an earlier question. And that earlier question we said yesterday revolves around the following issue. Through the Pasuk and through Chazal, we have three applications of the Issur Lifnei Iver. If you put a physical rock in front of somebody who is literally blind, and as we mentioned, that's a little bit offensive to think that we need to be told not to do that. That seems to be obvious decency. But to be told not to do that is a little bit surprising. Who is the audience, who's the target audience of the Torah in that context? And perhaps a little bit with that in mind, we find that Chazal have conveyed to us two other interpretations. One, what we've been talking about now, the enabling of someone to do an Avera, interpreting Iver as spiritually blind. And another interpretation we also find, the Torah's Kohanim says, that one who gives bad advice, knowingly gives bad advice, to someone else is exploiting their ignorance, exploiting their lack of awareness of what's good for them, so then that is also a violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Mechshol. So we posed the following question yesterday. How do you understand the fact that we have these three interpretations? Are they three separate interpretations? We have a pasuk that comes at us in three different ways. Torah Sheba'al Peh, Chazal have told us extra levels of interpretation. Or should we say, no, these aren't three different interpretations. This is all one din. This is all one idea. That the Torah says if somebody is disadvantaged in any way, you are forbidden from exploiting that disadvantage to hurt them. If they're physically blind, if they are spiritually blind, they have a tendency to sin. Or they are blind in terms of having a lack of necessary information or awareness for what's good for them. And you exploit that by giving them bad advice and having them get hurt. All of that, perhaps that's all the same idea. So you could say that we don't have three different Isurim. We have one issue, one Isur that has different spheres of application. So basically a question, how do you interpret the pasuk? And you could take a look, by the way, if you have a chance, look at the Torah Tamima and the pasuk with the Ivra L'Sutei Michshol, you see he discusses a little bit that possibility that we have all these different Yisurim coming as expressions of the same idea. So what we wanted to say yesterday was answering that question is very important to consider a question that the Achronim ask. A very basic question that the Achronim ask about Lifnei Ivra L'Sutei Michshol. How should we understand this idea that enabling a sin is an Isser Daraisa? You could understand it in two different ways. On the one hand, you could say that it's an accessory principle. That not only does the Torah prohibit the sin to the person actually pulling the trigger, but anyone who's helping out, anyone who makes it possible, it's as if they pull the trigger too. Which is a concept, as we mentioned, that exists in American law. But the guy who drives the getaway car is also guilty of bank robbery, even though he didn't do any actual robbing of the bank. Anybody who made it possible can be prosecuted under the same crime. So you could say that that's what this is telling us, that Lifnei Iver extends the status of the Avera, and whoever is helping the Avera is doing the same thing as whoever is committing the Avera. Alternatively, you could say, no, you could say there is no such idea. The Isser is only violated by the person doing it. If I help you eat non-kosher food, so it doesn't mean that I ate non-kosher food. I'm a tzaddik my whole life. I've never tasted non-kosher food. I helped you do it. So yeah, that's usur for a different reason. I'm not allowed to trip up people. So I'm getting you in trouble upstairs. So that's an aveira I did against you. It's not the aveira of eating treif. It's a separate aveira. And therefore, the Torah's model, the guy who drives the getaway car, he can't be prosecuted for bank robbery. He can be prosecuted for Lifnei Iver. But the bank robber is the guy who actually robs the bank. There's no such idea in halacha that will extend it to everyone who helps. Now, that is not simply a lumdish distinction. It's not a semantic issue. Will we call it Lifnei Iver? Will we call it something else? But there are literally life and death consequences to this question. This question has huge nafkaminas. And I'll ask you in a minute to maybe suggest some. But what we wanted to say yesterday is you can only be open to the accessory pshat, which is a very valid pshat, as we'll see. It may not be the only way to see things, but it's a very real possibility. But the accessory interpretation only makes sense if you're willing to read the pasuk not lefi pshuto. If you're willing to read the pasuk in additional interpretations. Because if the only thing the pasuk tells us is one idea, you can't exploit people's disadvantages to hurt them. So then the accessory pshat makes no sense. Everything has to come from the same concept. So if you trip a physically blind person with a physical rock, so we have no question what the problem is. It's very clear to us what the problem is. It's that you hurt him. You hurt a person who's at a disadvantage. That's obviously the idea. So all of the meanings would have to be along those same lines. No one would say that, oh, the problem with tripping someone with a rock is because when he falls, it's as if you fell. Clearly that's not what the issue is. So, therefore, if that's the case, if it's all one idea, it all has to be like that. That it's all about the consequences you brought about for the nichshal, for the iver. And if you want to say that helping an avera, it's as if you did the avera, there is no model for that in the pashtus of the pasuk. Right? There isn't any parallel to that in tripping somebody with a rock. So if you're going to tell me that that's what the pasuk is saying, then you have to say this is an additional interpretation that you find on the level of Torah Shabbat Peh. That Chazal taught us this as a new Isser tied to this Pasuk. It's not unprecedented that you can have a couple of Isserim connected to one Pasuk. So that's what's going on here. There are just different ideas all coming out of the Pasuk Lifnei Iver Lo Siten Mechshol. Now you may have noticed, if you saw in some of the Ma'amar Komos, that there is general agreement that Lifnei Iver does not get you Malkus. Right? The last topic we spoke about last semester, we talked about Lo Sachmod. Remember there also we had that issue, the Rambam and the Ravid, if you recall, that the Rambam and the Ravid both agreed that there's no Malkus for Lo Sachmod. They disagreed about why. Because we have this rule that you get Malkus for every single Isser in the Torah, with the exception of many, many, many of them. Right? Because there are many individual exceptions to why you would not get Malkus. So you often have a couple of choices. So with Lo Sachmod, the Rambam and the Ravid both agreed no Malkus, they had different reasons. So here too you find the same thing. Lifnei Iver, everyone agrees there's no Malkus. But there are some different reasons. Anyone see any of the reasons in any of the Ma'amar Makomos? Why would you not get Malkus for the Yisr of Lifnei Iver? So the Sefer HaChinuch says like that, right? The Sefer HaChinuch interprets it as a lav that doesn't have an action, which is interesting. We'll have to explain why that is. That itself is very questionable, because you could say, what do you mean there's no Maisa? I placed a Mishol in front of this person. Isn't that a Maisa? So how that makes sense, that's something we'll have to come back to. But what's interesting for now is there's another suggestion. If you saw, for example, the Kesef Mishnah, Hukos Kilayim, right, there's another category that's invoked. Anyone know what I'm talking about? Yes. Lav Shebeklalos. It's a little bit of a tricky term to translate. Well, Lav Shebeklalos seems to mean, is the Gemara Maseches Makos. What it seems to mean is that if you have a pasuk that is interpreted to tell you many different Yisurim, so then that becomes a Lav Shebeklalos, a pasuk that has a number of different prohibitions associated with it, and then there's no Chi of Malkus. There is a little bit of a machlokus rishonim. Does that mean there's no chi of malchus for any of the interpretations? Or maybe the one that's the simple explanation of the pasuk, the pashtus of the pasuk, maybe that one does have malchus, but the additional ones don't. But that's not so much an issue for us right now. But what's interesting is it so obvious that lifnei iver should be termed a lav shebeklalos? This phrase we just mentioned, the pasuk tells you a number of different yisurim, is that so obvious? You could have said that's not true. Right? You could have said, no, there's only one Ister that comes out of here. It's all one idea. You're not allowed to exploit people's disadvantages in any area that you find that to be relevant. So why should that be a lav shebeklalos? Right? You wouldn't say that eating chazer is a lav shebeklalos or eating bas b'chalav is a lav shebeklalos because you can't eat a cheeseburger in McDonald's, you can't eat it in Wendy's, you can't eat it in Burger King. Those aren't different Yisurim, that's all the same Isser. There's just different places where you could do it. So here too, could have said the same thing. There's just one Isser. And there are different arenas where it comes up. So to call it a lav shebeklalos means you're essentially taking a stand here. You're essentially saying that the Isser of enabling someone to sin, that is an idea that is different from what the Pasuk is saying. We need Chazal to tell us this, because we would not have read it into the Pasuk. This is Torah Shebaal Peh telling us there's a separate concept that also emanates from Lifnei Iver Lo Siten Mechshol. And that would then give us license to interpret in a completely different way, that it means accessory. It means that you become a part of the Avera, even though that interpretation does not fit at all with tripping a physical person with a physical rock. So far, so good? Okay, so this issue, so this question of whether Lifnei Iver is an accessory idea, hi?
Sorry.
No problem.
The Lash Bakalos, the Rebbe said, only makes sense if you can then extend it to a spiritual mikshel.
Well, no, we know that it extends to a spiritual mikshel, that the Gemara tells us. The question is, do we understand that as simply another arena where the same idea is being applied? Or is it a whole different concept? If you want to say that it's an accessory idea, then it has to be a whole different concept, because that interpretation doesn't make sense in the physical realm. If it's all the same idea, it just means hurting people physically, spiritually, intellectually, but hurting people in some way through their disadvantage. But then there's no such thing as accessory. It doesn't work in the physical realm. So this question of whether lifnei iver is an accessory idea, I join in the avera, or whether it is a different idea that I'm not accessory, you did the avera, I did not do the avera, but I'm doing a separate prohibition called lifnei iver, has many, many implications. Does anyone want to try to suggest any, to guess any? Enterprise, Aaron?
It could be that if you're an accessory, if you did it, therefore the punishment you would get would be what the person did avera?
Yeah, so theoretically that makes a lot of sense. Theoretically that should work. However, it's a little tricky on a technical point of view because we just saw that there's an exemption of malchus for the lifnei iver. So to say you get the punishment itself is harder to say. But the svara makes a lot of sense. And therefore, other things like that, other things, maybe not the punishment itself, but the rules and the status and other things that come along with the core iser, would be extended to the enabler if you have an accessory philosophy. While if you don't have an accessory philosophy, no, the other person's not violating the core avera. He's violating lifnei iver. Now, take that further. So what kind of differences does that make practically? It has some pretty major implications, some life and death implications. So just as an agenda point, there are a lot of different examples. Some of them we'll get to today, some of them maybe we'll save for next time because I want to get the two central chakiras out today. So in order to make sure we get them both mentioned, some of the cases we may push off till next week. But this, just so you take note of, this is question one, accessory or different iser. Lifnei iver means you join the aver. Yeah, that's the main chakira one. So what kind of differences does that make? How does that affect life? Lots of ways. Well, one way, just to categorize, is lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. Is it an avera ben adam l'makom or an avera ben adam l'chavera? What would you say? It depends. Okay, somebody explain to me, Michael, how does it depend?
Out of context, so can one say it's a ben adam l'makom?
Because Parshas Kedoshim, well, Parshas Kedoshim actually over there is filled with ben adam l'chaveras.
Well,
you're right near,
ben
yeah.
Okay.
That's true. Right. So that's actually interesting how it's relevant here. That pasuk ends there also. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's ben adam l'makom per se. It's interesting. We'll have to figure out how that applies here. Usually, as Rashi explains in Chumash, right, usually when the Torah says v'yareisa me'lokecha, what does that normally mean? Right, right. Sometimes it means that, but it means also that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what you're thinking. That sometimes you'll have an avera, which it's not obvious that you're violating it, and you could defend yourself by claiming you're not. So God says, "I can read your mind. I know what's going on. So don't think you can hide from me." So in the context of lifnei iver, that could have a couple of applications. But just to give you an example, so we just said before that bad advice is a violation of lifnei iver. So you could never nail me for giving bad advice, because I could always maintain that I thought it was good advice. I made a mistake. I told you to buy this house. I didn't know that it doesn't have a floor in the bottom and you'll fall all the way straight to China. I thought it did. I thought it was a good house. You can't prove that I knew differently. Right. So then the pasuk ends off and says, no, God knows. So even though an onlooker, a witness, might not be able to nail you on this, might not be able to prove conclusively that you knew you were doing something wrong, but God knows. So the pasuk ends the erase in Milokaf. So I don't know if that necessarily tells us ben adam l'makom, ben adam l'chavero. In terms of context, it happens to be Parshas Kedoshim over there. That's where v'yahavta l'reicha kamocha is. That's where lo sikam v'lo sitor, lo se'el l'chrocha. There's a lot of ben adam l'chaveros in that section over there. But aside from the context, yeah, Michael?
It's kind of mixed, though, because you
okay.
have commandments for korbanon in the beginning of the parsha.
Early in the beginning of the Sefer, and not so much in Parshas. Well, from there, you I mean, yes, no, but I don't know, the context isn't really going to really push us in one direction or the other so much. But just in terms of the theme of the Isser, would you say it's ben adam l'makom?
If you view it as you're hurting the other person, mm-hmm. then that could be more ben adam l'makom, but if you view it as you
Right, the other way around. Right, you're on the right track, but the other way around. So I think Shlomo was correct, right, that if you say that it's about causing the problem, causing the person problems, so that's an Issa ben Adam l'chaveiro. If we say that the Issa extends to the enabler, and let's assume for a second to make it simple, let's say we're talking about the enabling of an Issa ben Adam l'makom. Let's say the person's eating tray food, and you're helping him eat tray food. So is that a ben adam l'makom or ben adam l'chaveiro? So that really depends on our issue, right? That if you say that it's about accessory, you are connected to the Isser. The Torah doesn't just prohibit the guy pulling the trigger, but prohibits anybody who's helping. So then you're also violating a ben adam l'makom as well. But if it's about getting him in trouble, so then it's entirely feasible to say that he violates an Isser ben Adam l'makom, and you, by getting him in trouble, are committing an Avera ben Adam l'chavero. So that, on the surface, is one of the least consequential of the nafkaminas, because it seems like it's just a category issue. But there are differences between the categories. So what's a major nafkamina between the two? Do you have to ask for mechila? Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about this question. Do you have to ask for mechila? If you enabled somebody to sin, so is it enough to do tshuva ben adam l'makom, just go to shul and Yom Kippur and do tshuva? Or do you have to get mechila from the person? Which could be a little bit awkward on a couple of levels. Hi, Ephraim?
Mechila from which person?
From the person who you helped to sin. So if I helped you, I gave you tray food, so maybe I have to get your forgiveness. Now that could be awkward on a couple of them.
And if you help the guy sin and do a ben adam chavero, then you have to apologize to the second guy.
So that's another interesting question. So then if you say that you joined in his avera, maybe yes. And if you say that you enabled him and got him in trouble, so then maybe he has to apologize to the victim and you have to apologize to the perpetrator, which is definitely an interesting kind of scenario. But it provokes some interesting questions, because asking for mechila here is going to be awkward almost in all circumstances, right? Because if the person continues to perform such averos, and we'll discuss, we'll get to it today, we'll discuss, are there differences between if the person is a shogeg or a mezid? But if we assume for a moment that the other person is a sinner b'mezid, but if the person was sinned b'shogeg, right, I gave somebody non-kosher food, and I presented it as kosher food. So he didn't know that he was violating an aveira. So then it certainly makes sense to apologize to him and to ask for mechila for putting this person in a position where he did an aveira b'shogeg. But if he did the aveira b'mezid, so then he's going to be a little surprised you're asking for mechila. He asked you to pass the cheeseburger, and you did, and then you come back to him next week, you say, please be mochel me for passing the cheeseburger. So he'll say, well, of course I'm mochel you. I want you to keep doing it. I want you to do it again next time. Why should I not be mochel you? I mean, I have no kabbed in the first place. So if he continues to indulge in this avera, so he's not going to understand why you want mechila. But if he's done tshuva and he no longer does this avera, you have another issue. What's that issue? Anyone know? So we'll get to this a little bit in our Bakiyas, in the fourth parak, that there is an Isser, in the Torah called,
to remind
somebody their Averis is an Isser of Anas Tavarim. So that's awkward. So I once many years ago, one of the guys in Yeshiva suggested this could be related to another issue. I thought it was a very interesting Ha'ara. That there is a famous Machlokas, I think we spoke about it a little bit Yom Kippur time. There is a famous machlokus between the Chafetz Chaim and Rabbi Yisrael Salanter that sounds like from the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, assuming this is the way it should be read, sounds like from the Sefer Chafetz Chaim that if I spoke Lashon Hara about someone, and he doesn't know, he's not aware, I said it to a third party, the victim doesn't know about it, it sounds like from the Chafetz Chaim like you have to ask Mechila anyway. Even though that means telling him about a painful thing that he didn't know about. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter objected so strongly that he refused to give a haskama to the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, reportedly because of this issue. But he said, that can't be. there's an Isser in the Torah called on the Os Devarim. You're not allowed to hurt somebody's feelings. The fourth part of Metziah. So if I'm not allowed to do that, how can I justify doing that here just so I can get forgiven? Just so I can get Mechilah? So therefore, Sedra Bisrael Salanter, you have to find another way to do tshuva. You can't ask Mechilah in this circumstance because you're going to have to violate an Os Devarim. So it sounds like it's a machlokus between the Chafetz Chaim and Rabbi Saul Salanter about whether or not the need to ask for mechila overrides the prohibition of an Os Devarim. So somebody once pointed out, one of the Talmidim and Yeshiva pointed out once, that this could be another issue relevant to that machlokus. Right, let's say I invite somebody over on Pesach and I serve him chametz. Because he wants chametz. And then he goes to shul on Shavuos and learns all night in Shavuos and finds out that it's also the chametz on Pesach. And he does tshuva. And then comes Yom Kippur time. And I want to ask him for mechila. So I want to ask him to forgive me for being machshel in the yisur of chametz. In order to do that, I'll have to remind him that he used to eat chametz. And if he's done tshuva, so the Mishnah says that it's a violation of an Os Devarim to remind somebody of an Aveira they used to do that they have repented from. So that would seem to all emanate from the same issue. So is there a Chiyav of Mechila for Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Michshol? It's an interesting question, somewhat awkward in practice, but an interesting question at least theoretically, which all seems to come from this issue. Is it a Ben Adam L'Chaveira, like the Pashtus of the Pasuk? Right, if I trip somebody with a rock, that's for sure a ben adam l'chaveru that I have to ask mechila for. So is it all one issue? Or is lifnei iver in the avera context a different concept? It's an accessory concept. So I have to do tshuva myself for partaking, so to speak, in eating trey food or chametz on Pesach, whatever it is. But there's no unsettled issues between me and the guy who I help. He's very happy, he wants me to do it again, he doesn't have any need to have me ask him, ask for mechila. Okay, so that's one possible difference, alright?
So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said that the Isser to remind someone that they did a Rivera overrides the...
No, the opposite. He says that an Os Devarim, which includes the Isser to remind somebody that an Avera, does not get waived for mechila. So therefore, right, in the context, they were talking about another case of an Os Devarim. They're talking about hurting someone's feelings by telling them that you spoke Lashon Hara about them. So Chafetz Chaim said you have to do it in order to ask for mechila. And Rabbi Saul said, no, you can't ask for mechila at the expense of hurting someone's feelings. So included in the category of hurting someone's feelings of an Os Devarim is reminding them of their past avers.
So according to them, you just wouldn't be able to get mechila for something like that?
So that's an interesting question. So that's a longer discussion. We can talk about it maybe in a different context. I think we talked about it a little bit in Kippur time. Happy to come back to it, but it'll take us a little bit far afield for today. But the short answer is an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. It's a good avera to avoid because it has all that complexity to it. But God willing, you can discuss it in a different context. So that's one possible issue of the accessory shot. What other, and there are many, what other possible differences could there be? I alluded to yesterday, or today also, that there is a life and death difference. Aaron? So explain a little more clearly what you're referring to.
So if a person is going to be considered an accessory because of the fear, mm-hmm. So then if it's going to be one of the big three, mm-hmm. So then you should let yourself be killed rather than take any participatory role.
Excellent.
Whereas in another shot, mm-hmm. It would just be considered another application of the
Excellent. Okay, so that's a very important practical issue. And that's the machlokes we showed him on. If anyone got to see this on the Mar Makomos, it's a long discussion. So who argues about this? So you may not have seen this yet. I wanted to get to this idafka wanted you not to get to yet because it's very long and complicated. So it's better I can explain it to you first, then you can read it afterwards. But this is machlokes, the Balamor and the Ramban in Sanhedrin Daf Ayin Dalet. Anyone saw that on the list? Anyone get up to that? Try to struggle through it? All right, so now I'll tell you what it says, and you can look at it tomorrow or the next day, because it's worth seeing, but it's very complicated. But essentially, there is a discussion as follows. It's a little bit Purim in Yanu, so a little bit in Yanu Dioma as we approach Purim. The Gemara in Sanhedrin over there in Ayin Dalet, very well-known Gemara for telling the rule of Yehari V'al-Yavor, which is what Aaron was just referring to. You know that the Gemara says that all the Surim in the Torah, as a general rule, Yavor V'al Yehareg. Somebody puts a gun to your head and says, I'll kill you if you're not Mechal Shabbos, if you don't eat Treif. So then you should be Mechal Shabbos, you should eat Treif, you should violate all the rules in the Torah to save your life. With three exceptions, says the Gemara. The three known as the big three, colloquially, right? Murder, or Avodah Zarah, or Gili Arayos, those three are an exception, and those you're not allowed to violate, even on pain of death. So that much we all know from the Gemara. It's a well-known statement. Then the Gemara goes on to say that what about other, there are other categories also. The Gemara says that something that's done in public, or during a Shas HaShmad, if there's a time when there's particular persecution and the hostile government or whatever it is Davka trying to make a point about how they have conquered and subjugated the Jews and they no longer believe in the Torah, so then you have to make a stand for everything. Then everything is Yehari V'al-Yavor. So in the context of that additional category, so the Gemara asks, well, what about Esther? Right, to approach Purim, what about Esther? Esther intermarried. Right? Esther married Ahasuerus, and that was public. So what allowed her to do that? So the Gemara gives two answers to that question, only one of which we'll focus on right now. The Gemara says that there's a Hanas Atzman exception. That Hanas Atzman means that this idea that the government, King Achashverosh, is forcing you to do an Avera in public, so it's Yehari V'al-Yavor, doesn't mean anything that's in public. It means that if they're doing it because they want to show you that Judaism has been conquered, that you no longer believe in the Torah, they want to make a public display, so then, okay, it's Yehari V'al-Yavor. But if, in America, President Obama called you up and asked you to do something that he didn't know was usher, and he happened to, in public, ask you to commit an avera, so then, he's not trying to subjugate Judaism. He just needs this avera done, and he doesn't even realize, maybe, that it's usher. So then, says the Gemara, if it's for Hanas Atman, it's something they need for themselves, something that they want, so then, that's not Yehari V'al-Yavor. This extension is only when the public avera is for the purpose of undermining Judaism, not because it's something they happen to want in public. So the simple reading of the Gemara is that this exclusion, Hanas Atzman, that's not for the big three. That doesn't apply in the context of Gili Arayos or Shlichus Damim or Avodah Zarah. That's only this additional category. This additional idea that, by the way, everything is Yehari V'al-Yavor if it's in public, that only means if it's in public to make a point against the Torah. But if it's in public for their own Hana, so then that's not Yehari V'al-Yavor. That's how we would most likely read the Gemara. That there's no exemption of Hanas Atzman when it is the big three. However, the Baal Hamor, question about that?
I don't know, just thinking if it's Vayol Labayas, that would be one of the three names.
If it's what?
Vayol Labayas, the boss, and then...
Yeah, so that's all the Tosis raised the question why the Gemara is only interested about what part, why he's only asking about Esther from one direction. That's also going to get us a little bit far. It's an important discussion we're trying to take up, but we'll set it aside for now. But it sounds like from the Gemara that this Hanas Atman is not for the big three. It's only relevant to this additional category. But the Baal Hamor says differently. The Balamor says, no, it applies even to Avodah Zarah. How do you know? Because the Gemara over there, on that fine Dalam and Bays, the Gemara says that it's permissible to provide heat and light to a base of Avodah Zarah because they want the heat and light for their own Hana. So says the Balamor, look, here you have one of the big three, Avodah Zarah, and the Gemara applies this exemption of Hanas Atzma. So you see, it applies to the big three as well. How do you think the Ramban argues with this?
It's that act of Avodah Zarah. It's being,
it's,
say it.
Exactly, it's the favorite, right? That's what the Ramban says. Ramban says, no, Balamor, the Gemara doesn't say you could worship idols in the situation of Hanas Atzma. It says you can help out the idolaters. You can facilitate Avodah Zarah if it's for Hanas Atzma. So it's Yahar V'Yavor if you're actually doing the Avodah Zarah itself. But the case where the Gemara applies it is a Lifnei Iver situation. So what seems to be the issue here is that the Balamor groups Lifnei Iver and the Avera itself together. Whatever rule applies to the act applies to facilitating the act. If the act is Yehari Vayavar, helping it out is also Yehari Vayavar. While Ramban disagrees, Ramban says no, Yehari Vayavar is a separate iser. It's not one of the big, I'm sorry, Yehari Vayavar is a separate iser. It's not one of the big three. There's no din Yehari Vayavar by the favor. So that seems to be essentially this machlokes. The Balamor sees Lifnei'iver as an accessory principle. If you violate Lifnei'iver, you're violating whatever Avera the sinner himself is doing. And you get all of his rules, including Yehari Vayavar. While the Ramban sees it as separate concept. And the halacha, the Yehari Vayavar, is not applied to Lifnei'iver lo sitein mechshol. If you take a look on the Marmar Koma sheet next to those points, you'll see there's a Ramah quoted there. The Ramah, paskins like the Ramban, that you're not chayiv to be moser nefesh for Lifnei'iver, for a Yehari Vayavar situation. Now that, as I mentioned, that is extremely relevant to Maisa. That is hugely practical, literally a life and death issue, because you could all come up with many, many examples where this could present itself. And if somebody asks you to facilitate an act of Avodah Zarah, it's definitely conceivable, or murder, or Gilead Raios. So as long as you are not the actor, whether or not it's Yehari Vayavar, clearly that's a huge practical issue. And that's presumably all going to surround this question of how do you understand the concept of Lifnei'iver lo sitein mechshol. Jonathan?
I don't know precisely where, but I know there are many halachas regarding facilitating financing, let's say, certain aspects of Avodah Zarah. I think there, like halachas that Ramban talks about with like the Catholic Church.
Right, well, they're so doing business.
Giving money wouldn't, is more direct than I guess being kosher.
Possibly, but also the fact that it's usher doesn't necessarily mean it's a hard vayavar. We're interested right now, not in the question of whether it's mutter or usher, the question of even assuming that it's usher, but is it your hard vayavar?
Right, but according to that, this understanding that Ramah over there would even be saying it's usher according to Lifnei'iver over there.
Could be, but it could be that it's just not your hard vayavar.
Right.
That's what we're interested in right now. So this issue is probably illustrated also. This you may have seen is earlier on the list, the machlokas of two days in the Ran in the beginning of Masechet Shabbos. And Tosfos gets involved there as well. Anyone see the Ran in Shabbos? Right, so what's the issue there? The Mishnah, the first Mishnah in Shabbos, those of you who are learning Daf Yomi, so you're almost finished with Shabbos now, we're two-thirds of the way through Shabbos. So, Chazer, to go back to the first Daf in Shabbos, it's also to get a jump start because this is the parak the Shiva is learning next year. So, for next Elul, this is Yeshiva starting with this Mishnah, so get a little bit of a head start. So the first Mishnah in Shabbos talks about the prohibition of hotzah, of taking something out of the house into Rishus HaRabim or vice versa. And the Mishnah gives all these different scenarios where you have a poor person who comes to a door, he knocks on the door on Shabbos, and he asks for a handout. And if the householder, the balabais, gives him a handout, so something is going to get from inside to outside. There's going to be an act of hotzah taking place. So the Mishnah talks about all the different ways in which it could happen. The balabais sticks his hand outside the house, the ani sticks his hand inside the house, he puts it inside the hand, he puts it outside, all the different ways it could happen. And the Mishnah discusses, if you do it this way, they're both in violation, they're both chayiv on Shabbos. If you do it this way, one is chayiv and one is patur. So the Rishonim ask, the Ran, the Tosfos and others, they ask, wait a minute, how could you ever have a scenario where one guy is going to be chayiv for violating Shabbos, and the other guy who's helping him, who's a part of this transaction, he's going to be patur? How could it be? Isn't the other guy who's patur, isn't he in violation of lifnei iver lo sitei michshol? Are you not allowed to enable an iser? So by definition, by necessity, if you have one person doing an avera and you have another person helping him, don't you have to say that they're both chayiv? How can you have one person being chayiv and the person who's helping him being patur once we know there is a rule of lifnei iver? So if you saw the round, and if you see Tosfos, there are a couple of different answers to this question, but they could be grouped in two different ways. Anyone know what I mean? How could you group the two different broad approaches you could take to the question? What I mean is, I should be a little clearer, what I mean is there's two ways to answer this question. Either to try to answer it, or to say you don't care about the question. So if you look in the Ran, you want to comment on what I'm talking about, Simcha?
I don't know, I was just thinking that you could either say that we're just talking about Shabbos, we don't care about,
which is one
avoiding.
Right, and where does that sentence apply? Where does it appear? In the Ran. The Ran, at the end of his discussion, he says exactly that. But before he gets to that, and the Tosfos as well, they try to answer the question. So you can essentially have two approaches. Either you could try to answer the question, try to figure out some reason why there's no lifnei iver here, including maybe one of the people involved is not Jewish and not subject to Hilchos Shabbos. So you could try to figure out why there's no lifnei iver, or you could say, like Simcha just said, and like the Ran himself says in the end, that we're learning, then, next year, Maseches Shabbos, not Maseches lifnei iver, not Maseches Avodah Zarah. The Mishnah is not interested in teaching you right now the halachas of lifnei iver. Midinei Shabbos kama. We want to know the laws of Shabbos. Yes, there's also a rule that you can't enable avodas. Okay, so you know that already. That's a different general principle the Gemara tells us elsewhere. We're learning hilchos hotzah on Shabbos. We don't have to also teach you at the same time all the halachas of lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. So the two different approaches reflect two different ways of understanding lifnei iver. If you feel you have to answer the question, you have to somehow take lifnei iver off the table. So what you seem to be saying is that lifnei iver is an accessory idea. Enabling an avera is the same thing as the avera. So it's not sensical, it doesn't make any sense to say two people doing something together, one of them is mechalel Shabbos, the other isn't. While the other approach, like the last line of the Ran, is to say, no, we've got no problem saying that. Hilchos Shabbos is one thing, and lifnei iver is a different concept. We can talk about that separately. So that, again, has very major implications. If somebody helps chilul Shabbos happen, and again, you could come up with all kinds of cases where this will come up, is he considered to be a mechalel Shabbos or not? Now again, he's not going to be chayiv skila. We know that that's excluded. But other details besides the onesh, is he considered to be a mechalel Shabbos? Rabbi Akiva Eiger has a discussion in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Akiva Eiger discusses that we have a concept of a mummer. And a mummer is somebody who habitually does an avera, who has negated a certain avera. So usually a mummer is considered to have that status only vis-a-vis whatever avera he ignores. But Shabbos is special. Shabbos, a mummer l'chal Shabbos, somebody who negates the existence of Shabbos, is considered to be a mummer for the whole Torah. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger raises the question, what if somebody habitually, regularly engages in enabling Chilul Shabbos? Not in Chilul Shabbos himself, but in Lifnei Iver of Hilchos Shabbos. Would such a person be a mummer l'kol Torah kula, because he's a Mechal Shabbos? Or should we say, no, he's not a Mechal Shabbos, he's a Frumayid, he's never been Mechal Shabbos his entire life. Aye, he enables other people to be, okay, so Lifnei Iver, so Nisr Lav, that's not subject to Malkus. It's a lesser issue. But Chilul Shabbos, he would never do such a thing. So that again seems to be the same issue. There are many other applications of this, which I do want to discuss with you, so we'll try to get to that next time. But before we run out of time today, I want to mention what the second Chakira is. The second big Chakira that exists in Lifnei Iver. Hi?
In terms of the accessory, whether or not it's like Ben Dam Lechamira. If you say it's accessory, but isn't that, it's, everyone agrees that when you actually put a stumbling block in front of him, mm-hmm. whether or not that's actually an
issue,
another question, but doesn't that mean there's still the accessory and also the, enabling someone to
do an avera? If you say that there's accessory, you have to say both. Not necessarily, I see why you're saying that, but you could say the pasuk is just very limited, that it only refers to...
I mean,
to
it's possible to say, because I know that the Chinuch says that putting some in black is not even the Torah speaking about it at all.
Right, so it's possible to say it, but I don't know if you're forced to say it. So your assumption, which is an understandable assumption, that you could be machadish, that we have an accessory principle here also, but you have to still acknowledge at least then you're doing both, because you're also tripping the person up. That may or may not be true. We'll discuss that in a little bit because it impacts on a few other things. We'll have to bring in next time to get into those details. Before we're out of time today, I want to tell you what the second Chakira is, and I think you'll see how they tie into each other. And then in coming discussions, we'll have at least one more shiur about this. Maybe we can finish in one time, we'll see. We'll talk about how other applications of the two Chakiras, how they impact on things. But the second Chakira is as follows. And it was popularized by a sefer called Yad Malachi. The Yad Malachi poses the following question. Let's say, I don't want to use an example of a person because I'm making them do an avera. Unless we have a volunteer. All right, Aaron, you volunteer? So let's say I give Aaron a cheeseburger and he eats it. Right? So I'm in violation of the avera lo sitei mechsha. That's a standard example. But let's say like this. Let's say I give Aaron a cheeseburger right before shiur. So Aaron says, I don't want to eat the cheeseburger in the middle of shiur. That's a little bit disrespectful. So I'll wait till later in the afternoon to eat my cheeseburger. But he's got class all afternoon. He doesn't want to eat his cheeseburger in any of his classes in Yeshiva University.
Cold.
Right. That's true also, but he's willing to push it off. So he doesn't get to eat the cheeseburger till 10 o'clock at night tonight. So when did I violate Lifnei Iver? Did I violate Lifnei Iver when I gave it to him right before shiur? Or when he ate it at 10 o'clock at night? Now again, your initial reaction to that might be, okay, do I really care? So in Shemayim it's going to make a difference. Well, I did this avera at 11 o'clock in the morning or 10 o'clock at night. Do we really care what point it happened, Lamaisa? Does it make a difference? Well, I could tell you one case in which it will make a huge difference. How could we tweak the example so it'll make a huge difference? Simcha?
Say he doesn't end up eating it.
What if he doesn't end up eating it? Right, so if I put this mechshol in front of him and he doesn't end up doing the avera, am I still in violation? So that's a secondary version of the first question. When am I in violation? When I gave it to him, right before shiur? or when he ate it at 10 o'clock at night, which would have the consequence, the major consequence, that if he never gets around to eating it, maybe I dodged a bullet. Maybe I am actually not in violation. Nathaniel?
But by just analyzing the actual phrase, what you're saying, mm-hmm. don't put a stumbling block, even if there it doesn't actually happen.
You're right. That is an approach that many have taken, that the language of the pasuk, and again, we'll have to see how much we're concerned about the language of the pasuk, but you're right, that if I read the pasuk carefully, it sounds like, what does it say? Lifnei iver lo sitein mechshol, I should not put a stumbling block before the blind. It doesn't say, don't trip the blind person. It says, don't put the stumbling block there. It sounds like, if I want to stick very closely to the pasuk, that it is the giving of the michshol that is the aveira, regardless of what happens later.
And if you didn't stay close to the pasuk, then it
would be what? Then you might be open to another interpretation. So that all, I think, comes back to their initial...
That's sensitive.
Not necessarily, because if you want to say that lifnei iver is an accessory idea, which means we're deviating already from the pasuk, as we said, that means the pasuk doesn't really flow that way. So then, it only makes sense to say that I violated the Avera if he violated the Avera. If he didn't do the Avera, I was an accessory to nothing.
But an accessory.
Accessory to nothing, nothing happened. Right, so how...
It's like attempted murder, it's a lot of crime.
Right, but that's a different crime. Right? You don't get the same penalty for attempted murder. And it's not even attempted because... Okay, maybe it's attempted. But anyway, it's a different level, right? So we have an expression, we'll have to get into this a little bit more later. We have an expression, which you have to see if it's relevant here or not. The Gemara says sometimes, Shelo yehe tafel chamer mena ikar, that the secondary person, we never want to treat him more severely than the primary actor. So if the primary actor didn't do the Avera, so it's hard to imagine that the accessory is guilty of anything. However, if you say that it's about tripping him up, it's about what I do to him, and as Nathaniel correctly points out, you see from the pasuk that what I do to him does not necessarily have to mean I actually hurt him, but the language of the pasuk means simply I endangered him. I put a tripping block in his path. So then, that's the offense to the person. So then, once I gave him the michshol, that's when you are in violation of the Isser. So that's a very major question because of this possible scenario that you didn't do the Avera. And I think it really all flows out of our initial question. It all comes back to the same point, that what is the nature of Lifnei Iver? Is it accessory or is it a separate Avera? If it's accessory, you probably have to actually have the Avera take place. And all of that, like we said, emanates from, is the one idea in the pasuk, or are there three separate ideas in the pasuk? Right?
So if the person doesn't end up doing it, maybe then it's not a rock at all. You weren't putting initial.
So, right. So you could have said like that, except that the pasuk doesn't sound like that so much. It sounds like, as I think Nathaniel is correct in that, right, that the pasuk does say, don't put the michshol there. Now you're right, that we have to have some way. Right. So you have to have some way to define what a michshol is. So presumably, if I found a cheeseburger in the shiur room, because Aaron didn't get to it, so I go to Rabbi Reese's office and I say, Rabbi Reese, I found the cheeseburger in the yeshiva, you should confiscate it, put it in your desk. Right? So nobody's going to say that I'm in violation of Lifnei Iver because I gave a cheeseburger to Rabbi Reese. Right? So Rabbi Reese is not somebody who has a tendency to eat cheeseburgers. So therefore, it's not an amichshol that's going to apply in all cases. So for him, it's not a michshol. So you're right that if there was never the consideration that he was going to eat it, that wasn't anything that was on the radar screen at all, it wouldn't be termed a michshol. We have to have a way of defining it. So presumably it only kicks in when you have a situation that the person has some vulnerability to it. So the michshol looks like a rock. It has to be something somebody could trip over. No one would say that if I put a rock on my shelf, then it's a michshol because somebody could take it off the shelf, put it on the ground, and then somebody could trip over it. It's got to be in a dangerous position. I could argue about where exactly you want to draw the line, but you have to have some dangerous situation, and it's not going to be applicable in all cases.
Well, maybe the barometers, if they end up tripping over it.
Then you look back and you find out that, again, you know, I think... Right, and I think that would have been relevant, that would have been reasonable to say. You know, you could have said both interpretations only relevant if the person actually does it, because... The Aveira ben Adam Lachaveira also is that I got him in trouble, not that I almost got him in trouble. Except that the pasuk really doesn't sound that way. The pasuk sounds like the michshol placement is the issur. Now, part of the problem is, and we're almost out of time, so I'll just mention this, the Ad Malachi himself points to a few gemaras which point us in different directions. That you can bring a raya from one gemara one way and a raya from another gemara the other way, and it's hard to know what the truth is. Do you violate lifnei iver only when somebody actually violates an avera, or even when you created the michshol, regardless of what happens? So we can go through some of the examples next time, but before we end, I'll just mention one example. So in honor of us learning Bava Metzias, we should open the Bava Metzias once before today's shiur is over. So I'll show you one example where this comes up. That it's interesting, actually, on Ayin Heyim at Beis, which is the Gemara immediately before where we're going to start our polem issues. So right at the very end of the fifth parak. So the Gemara on that Amud actually invokes Lifnei Iver twice in the same page in different contexts. So before the Mishnah, or during the Mishnah, so the Mishnah says that it's somebody who enables ribbis is in violation of Lifnei Iver lo sitein mechshol. But then the Gemara over here in Ayin Hey Amud Beis, so the Gemara says, and this is on the Marmar Kolmos, if you had a chance to see it, that the bottom, right at the very end of the fifth parak, that kol mi sheyesh lo mos umalvo san shelo be'edim over mishum v'lifnei iver lo sitein mechshol. Happens to be, I don't know if we'll get to it or not, we'll have to decide how to allocate time, there's a major halachic discussion, major discussion in poskim about this Gemara, because it's a major question everyone asks, why nobody's makbid about this. In practice today, everyone seems to ignore this Gemara. And it's a big discussion if that's appropriate or not. But the Gemara here says that when you lend money to somebody, it's a big mitzvah in the Torah, you're supposed to lend money to people in need. But when you lend money to somebody, the Gemara here says you should not do so without witnesses. You should make sure that people saw you lending the money. Yes, sir? So you have to figure out exactly what meets the standard, and again, that's part of the whole discussion why today we seem to ignore this. But the concern seems to be that there has to be some proof of what happened. Why? So look at Rashi. What does Rashi say over Mishum Lifnei Iver? She'ole al rucho shalova lichpor. That the person who's borrowing money and there's no witnesses, it occurs to him that if he's going to deny this ever happened, nobody's going to know. So you create the possibility that the lender will deny that there ever was a loan. So the Gemara calls the creation of that possibility lifnei iver lo sitein mechshol. So it sounds like from this Gemara with Rashi that you don't need the guy to actually deny the debt in order to be over the issur. That just the fact that you make it possible for him to do so, that now, because you were not careful to set proof, so now he can steal from you and there's not going to be any impediment, that already is lifnei iver.
What about another maze?
Yes, that's a good question. If we want to bring our first parak and our fourth parak together, our fifth parak together, how likely is it the person's going to do that? So that's a question in general. A person's going to testify in court and take a shvuah, et cetera, et cetera. So that's how do you put in modem mixus and kofra akol? It's a fair question. But essentially, once you don't have proof and there's no actionability, so the guy doesn't even have to get to court now. The guy doesn't have to do anything because you have nothing by which you can establish there was a loan. So you're creating a big temptation. So that, says the Gemara, that's a ready lifnei iver. How you doing?
It's possible to read into Rashi that what he's saying here is that the reason that the Rabbanan have this set this up as a gzeira that it might come to lifnei iver, and that because it is the mindset.
Anything's
that
possible.
It's not that he's really over lifnei iver, it's that we don't want him to come over to.
It's always possible. It doesn't sound like it. You know, sometimes the discussion, what does over mishum mean? Simple reading of the Gemara sounds like he's saying he's in violation of the Yisur D'Oraisa. That's what it sounds like. So the Ad Malachi happens to bring different proofs, so we'll have to fill in what the proofs are. Maybe tomorrow, if you get to see the further in the Marmar Kolmos, you'll see a little bit what some of those proofs are. But that's a major discussion. So these two, just this is what we wanted to get out today, the two major Chakiras, they have many other branches that come out of them, some very significant, that God willing will fill in those branches. But we wanted to see today the two very major chakiras that are the topic of 90% of the literature about Lifnei Iver is talking about one question or the other, and the two chakiras we think really tie into each other completely. Is it that Lifnei Iver is an accessory principle, or is it a separate iser? And we mentioned at least two nafkaminas. Would it be a Hari Val Yavor if you enabled a Lifnei Iver of one of the big three? And that was Machlokas, the Balamor, and the Ramban, and the Ramah was Makel. Or if you enabled Chilal Shabbos, would you be considered to be a Machal Shabbos? Seems to be the question raised by Rabbi Akiva Eiger, seems to depend on a Machlokas, 2 days in the Ran in Tosfos. And the other major Chakira, when you give the Avera, when you give the Michshol, when do you violate the Isser? At the time of the giving of the Michshol, or at the time of the commission of the Avera? Which on the surface seems to be a semantic technical issue, but has huge implications if the Avera never happens. So did you do the Lifnei Iver only if the Avera happens and when it happens? Or from the moment of giving over the Michshol, regardless of if it happens or not? And that all seems to, again, emanate from the first Chakira, really for two reasons. One, as Nathaniel pointed out, because the Pasuk itself seems to put all the emphasis on the putting it of the Michshol in the first place. So if we want to say it all comes from the same idea of the Pasuk, we're more tied down to how the Pasuk reads. Or you could say that if it's an accessory idea, then it only makes sense to say you violated the Avera when it actually happens, and not if it doesn't happen. And we didn't get into the proofs and the discussions about that. We just mentioned this one, that the Gemara here in Bav Metzia says that if you lend money without witnesses, you're in violation of Lifnei Iver, and Rashi seems to understand it to mean not because there actually was a denial of the loan, but simply the possibility that there could be a denial of the loan. That's enough to make it a question of Lifnei Iver. Okay, so we'll have to fill in all the other branches to these two questions and get into a little bit some of the halacha maisa aspects. Aaron?
Which is important, Rashi, is not the accessory. It's the...
That's what it sounds like. It sounds like just a simple placing of a temptation in front of somebody is already Lifnei Iver, regardless of what actually happens afterwards. All right, who would like to daven mincha for us? Do we have... Sorry?